And good morning. It is Tuesday, November 3rd, and we're here in the studios live of 88.5 KRFY. And it is, what kind of day is it, Chris Bessler, my co-host?
Well, it's actually the morning show, and it's election day today, that's Susie. Right. So that's the hot topic for the day. We have in the studio with us today two, I guess you would say, election observers with some knowledge about the races. We have Jim McKiernan. He's publisher of the Bonner County Daily Beast. Hi, Jim.
Howdy.
And we have Cameron Rasmussen. He's the editor of the Sandpoint Reader.
Hello.
Yeah, thank you both for coming. And so we're going to be diving in a little bit later on what people are going to see on the ballot today when they go to vote. And, of course, we're going to be continually urging people to get out and vote and exercise their...
I was going to say, I'm going to say throughout the broadcast, get out and vote. It's our right here. So it's time to do that today.
But we'll try not to sound like a broken
record. Too much? Okay.
What is a record, anyways?
I'm not sure. The record for reminding people?
Records are making a comeback. They are pretty popular with folks my age.
The vinyl, is making a comeback.
Yeah. The vinyl.
But first, Susie, tell us is what's in store for us weather-wise this week.
Okay, the National Weather Service is telling us right now that it's 37 degrees out, slight chance of showers and patchy fog, and then mostly sunny. We'll take that. High today, 45. Partly cloudy tonight, low 31. Tomorrow, mostly sunny again. And in the evening, patchy fog, turning into about a 30% chance of precipitation later in the evening on Wednesday night. And lows, here's where it changes, 29 degrees. So it looks like we're going to get a little cooler at night. So it's time.
Yeah, after a pretty wet weekend, which was actually really good for the forest out there. Also outside, the sunrise this morning was at 6:34 a.m. Sunset will be at 4:24 p.m. Pretty early because we just went through the annual time change. And in the last week, we've lost somewhat more than 20 minutes of daylight, notwithstanding the time change. We're coming up on the winter solstice now, so we're losing a chunk of time, a chunk of daylight every day. And that'll continue until we get to December 21st. Today is the last quarter moon. The moonrise will be at 11:28 p.m. and the new moon, when it's not visible at all, will be next Tuesday night. Lake level is at 2052.89 feet, and that's down more than a foot from last week when it was 2054.22 feet, and it's still projected to continue lower. And I still haven't gotten the target for the lake level this winter. So they're drawing it down quite a bit, actually.
Mm-hmm. I want to get back to something you mentioned just a minute ago. Everyone's talking about it, and we can all talk about it if we want to, but it's not going to change much, daylight savings time. Everyone's complaining, and I'm not sure why. Yeah. Do you have a sense of why? Controversy?
You know, personally, it doesn't make much difference to us here because our days get so short, whether we have it an hour more in the light in the morning or at night. It's not so much of an issue because we're far enough north. That's my opinion.
Okay.
But some folks just don't like to mess around with changing the clocks, I think. Let's ask our distinguished panel on the subject
of daylight savings. What do you think, Cameron?
I don't really have too much of an opinion. I've read that people find that its usefulness is somewhat outdated in this day and age, and that's an interesting point. I always like it when you get that extra hour. It's kind of like unwrapping a present every year, and that's kind of cool. But then again, there's the flip side where you lose your hour later on.
Yeah, so, in the fall, generally. Yes. Jim, your opinion on this pressing matter?
Well, think about all those people Sunday morning who had partied too hard on Saturday night, and they got an extra hour
they
of sleep.
They got a reprieve.
So yeah. I actually like driving to work in the daylight, so yeah. I don't mind going home in the dark. And
yeah, I think for us people up north, I think it actually is not a bad deal.
But no, I don't mind it. What I found is it takes me about 3 days to kind of acclimate into the new system.
Yeah. And then you start running as late as ever.
I know.
So other things going on around town this week. Before we get into the main topic, which is the election, let's talk about a few of the things coming on around town happening this week. As always, there's more going on in town than we could possibly touch on, but it's a big week for cinema.
That's right.
There's a Wild and Scenic Film Festival on Friday, in the Sandpoint Event Center. And then on Saturday, it's the Sandpoint Film Festival. They're going to have three blocks of short films screening in three different times. The first block starts at noon, second one's at 3 p.m., and then the third one's at 6 p.m.
And with that in mind, tomorrow morning at 8 a.m., I'll be here in the studios with representatives from the Sandpoint Filmmakers Network talking about Saturday's Sandpoint Film Festival. So you can join me, find out more about what they have planned for Saturday.
Yeah, and we should clarify, the film festival is going to include some locally made films. We actually have an active group of local filmmakers that are doing some pretty nice things, as well as it will include films that have been submitted to the festival by people from outside the area.
Yeah.
So there should be some really interesting stuff, and it's really fun. Cam, you're a big film guy.
Yeah.
Have you previewed any of the stuff that's coming?
I haven't previewed any of the films that are going to be featured this year, but I've gone to the film festival every year since they've run it, and it's always a great time. The people that organize it have been doing a really excellent job of finding all kinds of interesting foreign short films, and, you know, they have a real international offering every year. I mean, they've had films from Israel and Mexico and Spain and all sorts of countries. It's just a real worldwide affair. And so, I would encourage everybody to go check it out. It's a lot of fun, and it's one of those rare opportunities to get to, you know, see some of these very limited distribution films right here in Sandpoint in the Panada Theater.
And it's actually kind of a bargain. You can get an all-day pass for, I can't say the price,
but you can go to
it's cheap
it's all-day pass. Very affordable. You can go to sandpointfilmfestival.com for more information on that, or to get to go ahead and get a pass. And with that, let's turn to today's topic. It is election day. Polls are already open. They opened at 8 a.m. They're going to be open till 8 p.m. This is a city election year, so we have elections in all the little cities are in Sandpoint and all the cities outlying Sandpoint. A lot of the races are uncontested, but we do have a feisty mayor's race here in Sandpoint, and as well in Ponderay, there's a mayor's race that has three candidates. Also on the ballot for Sandpoint voters will be a proposed 1% sales tax, the money of which will be used for rebuilding the grandstands Memorial Field. So we got some things to dig into here. And why don't we start out with a little bit of talk about the ballot measure. Jim, have you, what's your read on this ballot measure? Now, you have editorialized in favor of it.
Yep, I'm in favor of it. I think it's important.
We're not actually here at the radio station endorsing anything, but we want to talk about the pros and the cons.
Right.
What would you say some of the pros are of the folks coming together to pass this?
Well, I think, you know, you have a gem in the community, and I mentioned this in my editorial, that you don't typically have in a lot of small towns. And I've seen other small towns, and I'm from a small town, Snoqualmie, Washington, which is just east of Seattle. And they had a high school stadium, so it was a little bit different setup, but their choices were to demolish the old stadium and build a new one in that location or in another location, and they opted to build it in that location. And that one's very scenic as well, much like this stadium, in that there you have a huge mountain, Mount Si, at the end of the stadium. Here you've got a lake. And you can't get a much more picturesque setting than that. So to think that could be altered for eternity, because I can't imagine once this passes, I hope, which we're all hoping, I'm hoping that it passes. But if it doesn't, you know, I don't know that could actually come back on the ballot quick enough to make any kind of impact in the future. And so it's a huge asset that for those people that don't feel that it's necessary, it's an investment in the community. And yes, I don't like taxes just as much as anybody else. Unfortunately, I don't get to vote on this. I'm just outside the city limits, but it's a huge investment in the community. And I think will be will bring a lot of good things in the future. I think, you know, you might see it as a better venue for other things.
And in your research on this, being the newspaper, this Bonner County Daily Bee, what kind of arguments have you seen against something like this measure?
I've seen a lot of different arguments. You know, we have our blogs on the Daily Bee website, which I end up moderating quite a bit. They like to attack each other at times, but hey, it's all in. It's open dialogue.
Yeah. Like every time.
Yeah. Every time, yeah. And so we try to steer them and say, focus on the issue. But anyway.
Cut off the coffee.
Yeah. Well, yeah, coffee's good. But I think the biggest thing I've seen is I think there's a lot of misplaced or misconceptions about how taxes are applied. And in this case, there's only one real alternative to the current situation, and that would be to create a parks district, which may be then countywide. But that takes a lot of work. And so I don't think you could get that done in the next 5 years. So in this case, it's a great alternative. It spreads the impact across a broader audience and also takes into account the people that will be here spending tourism dollars. And otherwise, it's just going to be city residents. This goes beyond city residents.
Cameron, let's frame this up just a little bit here. It is a 1% sales tax. That means that Idaho currently has a 6% sales tax. So that means that people that purchase goods in the city limits would be paying a 7% sales tax instead of 6%. Now, the 6% goes to the state. The city never gets to even actually touch that. None of that is contributed to the services that the city provides. The 1% tax, however, would be dedicated to the city. The city would get all of it, and it would be dedicated to rebuilding the grandstands. Now, the grandstands, the cost, they've gone through a couple different designs. You wrote a story on this. Mm-hmm. The cost is at $2.72 million. One of the to redo the grandstands. Mm-hmm. One of the arguments I've seen against it is that it's just too much. It's too extravagant. Cameron, in your story or your research on it, could you address that question?
Sure. Yeah. You know, I feel like there are always arguments that construe, well, this is too much, or but then again, I've also heard a lot of people saying things about the design, like, well, why are there these supports? You know, these architectural supports blocking the view. Why couldn't we go with one of those designs that has no supports
over
the
design.
Roof? Yeah, the canopy. And once again, that was a cost-saving measure. So I think, in my opinion, they've done a pretty good job of hitting on a design that was that saved costs, while at the same time, you know, maintaining this as a sort of an aesthetic high point of the community, something that, you know, people look forward to seeing and visiting and going to watch games and things like this, or going to the festival at Sandpoint. You know, it's a beautiful park, and I know the people in the parks and rec department are pretty keen on making sure that it maintains its aesthetic value. So, yeah, in my opinion, they've done a pretty good job of balancing out those costs. But then again, you know, there are people that are content with, you know, aluminum bleachers.
Which is probably the alternative that the city will turn to if the grandstands are removed,
right?
Just for costs,
right?
And even the bleachers can be tens of thousands of dollars.
Oh, aluminum bleachers are expensive.
Aluminum bleachers, and sure. Of course, they do have a little section of aluminum bleachers on the other side of the field.
You should always give the visitors the not so comfortable seating with no cover.
The very cold.
Yeah,
they conduct the heat away when you're sitting on them.
The other thing is too, you know, you have. I mean, ADA compliance and some of those things are going to add costs to this, and it's going to be much more conducive to those people who may be challenged in their daily lives to be able to use the stadium much more than they can now. And so, you know, those kinds of costs don't come cheap. There's a lot more regulation, I'm sure, than there was. When was this built? I can't remember.
It was built in 1946. I think they started the construction. It is a wood structure.
Right.
And one of the things about the new design, they're going to build it mainly of concrete and steel in order for it to actually last longer. And these, you know, 46 till now, it's almost 70 years at these.
It's a long time for a wood structure.
For a wood structure.
Yeah.
And in fact, if you do the math, they accommodate 900 people. And if you say the average weight per person is 150 pounds, 140 pounds.
Really? That's all? Okay. I'm feeling good.
That's the average. Okay. You got to average in the smaller people. Those stands have to support about 400,000 pounds. It's a huge amount of weight, and there are serious safety concerns about these aging things. If you've ever been underneath have you ever looked underneath
the stands? I saw some of the pictures that the city was showing of the gaps between beams, and that there's I like to stand on the field at football games anyway, so I'm going to continue to do that until
until there's something else back there. Secure place, yeah. But they have been putting band-aids on the current structure. So, that is one of the big issues on the ballot today.
I have a question about the grandstands, and we've probably covered this, and I wasn't paying attention. If this measure did not pass, what would happen?
Well, Parks and Recreation Director Kim Woodruff has been pretty clear that... if this measure does not pass, the grandstands are going to be torn down. It's one of these deals where, you know, they've been working on this for about 5 or 6 years now, trying to raise funds and get corporate sponsors, business sponsors, things like this. And the time just kind of ran out. And they are saying this is kind of the last-ditch effort to save these grandstands. And so, you know, I think people need to weigh that in their decision on how they vote. Is, you know, is this something that is important to you? Then, you know, you better get out and vote. But, it seems like this is a all-or-nothing type deal this time.
And I'll throw out one more comment on that. I've seen some criticism that, you know, they shouldn't even have put this up for a vote. But actually, that's democracy. The best part of democracy is the council have waited out. We're either going to take them down or we're going to rebuild them. It's a big expense. If we rebuild them, we got to do some kind of tax measure to cover it. And let's let the people decide. So that's what's happening today. And hopefully, you know, obviously the will of the people, at least the ones that show up to vote, are going to be deciding this particular question.
And I think the city council did a good job by looking at an option that allows some of the burden to be placed to a larger audience than just city residents.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. And that's been a very big point that the proponents have been making on this, is that the resort city tax, or the local option tax, it's called by both names, it's actually resort cities under the size of a 10,000 population are the only ones in the state of Idaho that can exercise a local option sales tax. And that's because the legislature recognized that that resort cities, small resort cities, have to pay for services for people many times their size, because tourists and out-of-town folks that come in to use the parks, and they use the streets and street lighting and fire and police services and all the things that city residents pay through their property taxes normally. Mm-hmm. So that is a good point, Jim. This is a tax that gets everybody who purchases things in town to chip in on the cost of the...
And then I heard the argument that some people would not shop in Sandpoint because of the extra 1%. And I'm really, you know, I kind of shake my head and I say, really? That just seems kind of strange to say that, first of all.
1% is one penny on the dollar. So if you buy a dollar, you're going to pay a penny of tax. And actually, people, I don't think they've been computing it right. I saw a guy that put up a blog yesterday that said, that's going to be $10 if I buy $100 worth of groceries.
That's 10%.
That's 10%, right.
Yeah.
If you buy $100 worth of groceries in town, you're going to only pay an extra dollar.
Check your decimal point.
Yeah, check the decimal point. It's a very small impact. And another point, of course, is that it expires after 5 years.
Yeah.
And that is one of the criticisms people have. Well, it won't just expire. They'll keep it going. But PitCam, could they keep it going?
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, if they wanted to keep it going, they would have to put it up for a second vote. And that would mean pitching some great project that everybody can get behind and explaining exactly how the funds will be used. I think it's important to note that I've seen some confusion about this online and elsewhere, that once they collect the money for the grandstands, then they've got a whole list of secondary things that the money will continue to be used for. So it's all laid out on the ballot. It's going to be mostly park maintenance and things like this. And
City
so,
Beach, I think they had some projects.
Yes.
All you saw, the money is dedicated to basically parks projects. And the reason it's kind of, they don't really know exactly how much they'll raise. Mm-hmm. They can only estimate it. The way the city, the way the state does their sales taxes, they collect it for the whole county. They don't break it down by city. So the city is just estimating how much they'll raise. And they might actually even come up a little bit short. To raise the $2.72 million
well,
over 5 years.
Kim Woodruff seems pretty confident that that won't be the case. He, for instance, at the forum that we put on, he, I believe, said that he guaranteed that they would raise that amount of money. So he sounded pretty confident.
Kim's getting his checkbook out in case it's a little short.
Yeah,
that's right. If comes up a million short, you know, Kim, sell that house.
Yeah.
I just want to remind our listeners, this is the KRFY 88.5 Morning Show with Chris and Susie. We're here in the studios with Jim McKiernan, the publisher of the Bonner County Daily Bee, mm-hmm. and Cameron Rasmussen, editor of the Sandpoint Reader. And we're talking about voting. Election and our city.
Today is election day, and the polls are open right now till 8 p.m., and it involves all the cities around here, not just Sandpoint. So Clark Fork, Dover, East Hope, Kootenai, Old Town, Ponderay all have elections today. But now, most of the elections are actually uncontested. And in fact, we're going to swing back to talk about Sandpoint right now. We do want to touch on Ponderay since they have an interesting mayor's race there with three candidates. And we'll come back to that later in the show, time permitting. But in town, in Sandpoint, we have three open council seats, but only three candidates. They are the three incumbents. So the candidates for city council are Bill Aiken, Deb Fragoso, and Thomas Eddy. It's been pretty low-key in terms of that particular campaign because they are unopposed. Not much suspense there on who's going to be our city council. They did speak at the candidates forum on when was it? It was last Wednesday.
Yes, mm-hmm.
at Community Hall. And Cam, you were there covering that. What would you say? What was your take on the city council candidates? Do you think they are planning to do anything different going forward than they have during their tenure here the last couple of years?
You know, it seems to me like they're going to be continuing a lot of the initiatives that have been on the table for the past several years. I know one big one that people are going to, if they haven't been following it, when it happens, it's going to really throw them for a loop, is the downtown streets reconfiguration. And that's one thing that they brought up at the forum, rightfully so, is because that is going to really transform the way you drive in Sandpoint. A couple of key one-way streets are going to be converted to two-way streets. And this is all an effort to reclaim several city streets from the state, which is using it for the state highway system. So, of course, First Avenue is a big one that the city for a long time has been eyeing up as they are wanting to initiate this whole renewal project for the downtown core, which is, you know, they've got all sorts of big ideas for it. You can even check it out on the city website in their Sandpoint Downtown Streets Guide to get an idea of the vision that they have. But once those street traffic flow reconfigurations change, it's going to have a big impact on how you drive.
So that means that all the people going the wrong way on Church Street will be actually going the right way.
Yes, it'll be their lucky day.
Yeah.
For a change, it might be the out-of-towners that have a leg up on the locals. So that's it's going to be a strange thing.
Yeah. It is kind of fun out my window in my office just to look right there and see who turns the wrong way out of the post office.
I'm constantly, no, wrong way.
I just saw, it was only a few days ago, I just saw a nightmare situation on Pine Street where somebody turned the wrong way and they were dodging, you know, incoming cars and all sorts of things.
Oh, boy.
It was honking and it was a big mess. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I can actually remember when they changed some of the streets from two-way to one-way, whenever that was, 30 years ago. And there was an awful lot of griping at that time. And I would anticipate there'll be an awful lot of griping this time. Mm-hmm. It just comes with the turf of changing things.
Yeah.
Well, regardless of if we still have one-ways or not, I want to remind the bicyclists, this is my big pet peeve. If it's a one-way street, you have to act like you're a car and don't go the wrong way on a one-way street just because you're on a bike. It doesn't work.
Yeah,
it's really
dangerous. You see a lot of those guys going down.
Makes me mad.
Particularly Church Street. Okay, so the city council candidates are going to be dealing with that. It'll be a big issue for them coming up. And they are, again, unopposed. That's Bill Aitken, Deb Fragoso, and Thomas Eddy. Voters will see only their three names on the ballot, and there aren't any eligible write-in candidates. So they're getting a free pass. Before we go on to the mayor, though, what would be your take on, you know, 2 years ago we had 9 candidates for 3 seats for city council. This time we had barely enough to get the job done. Now normally you would think that indicates that people are satisfied with their city government, but in the mayor's race we're not hearing that.
Yeah, you know, and I struggle with, you know, speaking for the entire mood of the community, but... I think that just the low number of candidates this time around is perhaps indicative of a race where people are maybe a little bit more tuned out than they were before. You know, for whatever reason, I think that when we had our big election several years ago, that, you know, generated intense interest. We had a lot of things on the table. You know, there were some big projects that were coming down the line. I'd have to check my timeline just to be sure, but of course that was when things were really heated up on the downtown streets, you know, debate and whether or not we were going to enact this curve, which was going to be a big street that was going to go through Sandpoint. That was ITD's original plan, and they had the money all, you know, lined up and everything, and then the council ultimately said thanks but no thanks, because they weren't wild about having this big street, you know, right there. So
yeah, it was going to curve from, it was called the old railroad line through town, and curve from basically Dubs over to actually to reach Fifth and Church. And that was a big issue at that time. Maybe that's what excited. Jeff, you know, you haven't been here long enough really to have that history, but why do you think we had, what would your opinion be, just based on what you know about town at this point, why we had such a low turnout?
Well, I think, first of all, politics in small towns is a thankless job. I think that's part of it. And compensation levels, and I don't think it's, you know, I don't have any data in front of me, but I know from some of the other communities, getting candidates to run has always been a problem. And it's not so much that there isn't issues to tackle. I've noticed that it's such a huge time commitment, and the compensation is so low that you really have to have a love and the time. And if you think about it, those passionate people probably have kids that they want to make sure they spend time with. So there's other things. And so I think it's just the time commitment to be on the city council. It's not like you go to a council meeting, make a decision, and boom, you're off for the next council meeting at, you know, a couple weeks away. It's a huge time commitment, and I think that's...
Yeah, we had Bill Aitken in a couple weeks ago, and he did say he goes 6 or 8 hours a week, he figures, that he's putting in. And you do the math, I think they get a $200 a month stipend. You know, they're making below minimum wage if they're doing their job properly.
So
they do catch a lot of heat. Anonymity
is out the door. You're having dinner at the Hydra, and all of a sudden somebody wants to come up and talk to you. You're sitting there with your spouse. It's tough.
It has takes a certain mindset to want to pitch in and actually serve the community that way. So
I think pot shots too, though. I mean, people are taking pot shots at candidates from the from the far bleachers now. Yeah. And, you know, the robocall thing's a good example. That's BS. I mean, why would you want to run and have to deal with that kind of garbage?
Right, right. And the robocall, of course, that does relate to the mayor's race.
And before we go too much further, we do want to say thank you to everyone who does take up the call to serve our community in the way, such as the city council. As you say, it's somewhat thankless, but it's so important.
Yeah.
Because some of the decision making and really forming our community is vital.
Yeah.
So thank you.
Jim, you mentioned the robocall. Just in the event somebody listening may not understand what the robocall is or have heard about that, go ahead. Tell us what was the robocall.
It's almost somebody compared it to something that may have happened in North Idaho back in the days of the other political parties that, you know, kind of talked about white supremacy and all these kinds of things. They kind of went into this diatribe about how terrible one of the candidates is, and honestly, who knows who it is, but it really doesn't seem to, there's nothing there focusing on the issues. It's more an attack personally on a candidate, and my feeling is if a person's willing to step forward and jump into the race like that and serve, then they should at least have our respect in the form of no personal attacks.
Mm-hmm. So got a couple of media guys here. How are they going to be able to track down the person that originated this call?
Well, law enforcement is sure working on it. You know, the interesting thing is that we just recently received documents, filings with the Secretary of State you have to submit for... Actually, whoever did this went about it wrong. You're supposed to submit these to the city, not to the state, for these city elections. But whoever did it, you know, printed off these forms, filled it out with apparently bogus information, and shipped them off to the Secretary of State, the Idaho Secretary of State. So, you know, the person that's behind this has likely committed election fraud, from what I'm gathering from law enforcement. And that's a felony, and so they probably better hope that they covered their tracks. But, you know, the deal is that, you know, they're trying to trace these calls back to whatever business or service enacted did all of these, set up these robocalls. And, you know, it's a good question of whether that's going to be possible or not. But, yeah. If it is, then they can get a warrant for the company and find records and trace it back to whoever did it. And if that happens, somebody's going to be in a lot of hot water.
I don't think that, it's going to be difficult to find the individual. And it really is just a case of election fraud. Unfortunately or fortunately, depending on how you look at it, it's protected. Your ability to voice your opinion about a candidate is protected. So we don't the message may be kind of strange. It's a protected message. The only thing that they did wrong is that they didn't go through the proper channels for election coverage.
Yeah. So. Well, I think the thing they do wrong is they don't identify themselves.
Yeah,
it's fine to oppose a candidate and state your reasons for that, but. To hide behind the anonymity of the robocall is...
But we're becoming a society that has gotten better at being anonymous in those attacks. I mean, you can attack with a bogus Facebook account. You can attack with a bogus email address. We see those attacks in the blogs on the Daily Beast side all the time, and it's just like... really makes no sense.
Yeah, it's part of being of the internet age, actually, ability to stay anonymous.
One of the things that I think about, because I've received those, and as soon as I hear that voice, I hang up the phone. But, you know, it infringes on my time to pick up a call and then have to go, oh, it's them again. But I don't think that it's had a negative effect, hopefully, on anyone's decision of who they're going to vote for, and it really shouldn't.
I think it's so far out there that if people actually use that to make a decision about a candidate,
really,
you know, that's really stretching it.
Right. Well, it sure hasn't kept it from being a dicey issue, though. You know, we've received comments from supporters of both candidates at varying intervals that have been annoyed with our decision to cover this. But it's one of the hotter pieces of news of this election. Honestly, yeah. A lot of people are just taken aback by it. So
yeah. Okay, so we are in, you're listening, I remind our listeners that they're listening to the 88.5 KRFY Morning Show with Chris and Susie, and we have in the studio today with us Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader, Jim McKiernan from the Bonner County Daily Bee, and we're talking about the election. Today is Election Day. The polls are open. They're open till 8, and we're just about to dive into the Sandpoint Mayor's race. I want to get our guests a read on the two candidates and where they're different, actually, where they're standing apart in their positions. But before we do that, we're going to take a breather and we're going to have a song, Susie.
A short song. This is Frank Sinatra and High Hopes. It was recorded in 1959. And I don't know how we came about this song, but
High Hopes sounds good on Election
yeah.
Day.
Yeah. So here we go. We'll be right back. Stay with us. High Hopes, Frank Sinatra. And that was Frank Sinatra and High Hopes with a bunch of children singing in the background. And this is 88.5 KRFY, and this is the morning show with Chris and Susie and Chris.
Yeah, well, we have high hopes that people will get out and vote today. It is Election Day. We're in the studio with Cameron Rasmussen from the Sandpoint Reader and Jim McKiernan from the Bonner County Daily Bee. We're talking about things that people are going to see on the ballot today. And the biggest contested race in the area is the Sandpoint Mayor's race, where Mo Dunkel is opposing Shelby Ronstad. And they've both been covered pretty extensively in the Daily Bee and in the Reader. There's been a forum. The Sandpoint Online has got a bunch of information on them as well. So we're not endorsing any candidates here, but we do. Let's talk about the differences between these two candidates. Jim, what would you say that, you know, differences that voters might like to know about the Mo and Shelby?
Well, I got to meet both, and, you know, it's obvious in talking to both that they have a compassion or are very passionate about the city and compassionate for its residents. So I think that they both really care. I don't get the impression one is just running. You know, there's no egos involved that I could see. I think that Shelby has, you know, some experience in the city council, has some experience with the way things have been run in most recently. And my impression is that type of council and direction will continue under Shelby's leadership. Mo brings with him probably some new ideas. You know, he's a homegrown kid, which is always kind of neat to see, but somebody willing to step up into that public eye like that. But he's obviously just as passionate, small business manager / owner, so he's got some experience there, as does Shelby. So I think the biggest difference between the two is you know, one, Mo's kind of hung his hat on transparency, which, you know, is a huge thing for newspapers, especially. I've editorialized several times that I feel sometimes we're not heard as a means of, you know, newspapers historically are there, and one of the pieces is to hold elected officials accountable, and sometimes we just don't get heard like I think we should. But Shelby's been very open as well, and so it's really hard to say. There, you know, there's not one issue you can throw at him and say, "What do you think about this?" I mean, we talked about the city administrator position. I know Mo was against having a city administrator. Shelby was for, but now that decision has been made, both seem supportive. I think Mo likes to talk more about the process, which is one of my concerns, was the process by which the city looks at a city administrator candidate. Shelby feels that the city administrator candidate process may not be as transparent as necessary, but he does feel there's some public input coming at a council meeting. So that's probably the biggest thing, is one was that I can see difference-wise. One was not for the city administrator. One was for the city administrator. Mm-hmm. And that city administrator is going to have a huge impact on the community for a while. So that probably in itself is the one issue that I noticed the most between the two.
Okay. Cam, same question to you. What would you say the differences between our mayoral candidates, Shelby Ronstadt and Mo Dunkel, are?
Well, yeah, it seems to me, just watching their campaign, that the, you can dig into all sorts of individual issues and see where they're the same and see where they're different. I think as far as public perception goes, what they've really relied on is Shelby has emphasized his experience. You know, he's been involved in city government in some capacity or another for, you know, many years, whether it be through helping with the comprehensive plan or being on the Planning and Zoning Commission or now his time on city council. So, yeah, he's got all that under his belt. And it's, I think, a kind of interesting thing that Mo's Dunkel seems to be coming from the opposite end, in that he's saying that, listen, I'm an outsider. I can shake things up and bring a new attitude to City Hall. Of course, as has been pointed out previously, he is running on a big transparency is really the big word that he's used a lot throughout his campaign. So, whether or not the City Hall is transparent enough right now is certainly a big topic of debate. I think that there are strong arguments to be made on both ends. You can find examples, you know, where maybe the operations of the city government weren't, you know, necessarily maybe visible quite enough. But I think there's also a strong argument to be made that, you know, I go to almost every council meeting and they're never attended. You know, it's me and, a reporter from the Daily Bee often, and then some certain department heads, and that's about it, you know? So I feel like, you know, even though we can find individual cases where transparency has been an issue, there are also a lot of ways that the community could be more engaged with its local government. But either way, I think, yeah, those are the big differences is, you know, a longtime member of city government versus political outsider that wants to change the attitude of City Hall in some respect or another.
I think Cameron brought up a good point, though, and Susie said it earlier, is apathy is really the biggest problem, because, you know, you hear people complain about the issue of the city administrator or the streets or whatever it is, whatever issue the council's facing and the mayor, and you get two or three people at a council meeting to make those decisions. And I think apathy is the biggest problem in most small towns. I mean, it's not, the standpoint's not unique. I mean, you go to any city council meeting in any small town across the country, and I'm guessing you'll find a couple of reporters, maybe one or two people that just love going to, those kinds of meetings, and then the council and mayor, and that's it. And a big issue comes up, and nobody's there to voice their concerns. But boy, they can jump on the bandwagon after the decision's been made.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely an issue, and I know that both candidates have spoken to their hopes that they could engage people more. I think Mo was suggesting that maybe both of them. I'm not sure. Was suggesting that there could be they could stream the a video of the. Of the council meetings online.
That'd be good.
Which would be very possible. But you have to, the same folks that are apathetic about going to the meeting are probably going to be kind of choose between a kind of boring council meeting. Frankly, they are frequently boring, and that's why people don't show up. They're dealing with a lot of business issues that are just the business running the city. How many people were actually going to tune in to watch that? So, yeah, I mean, I think we could scold... as people here involved in the media, we can scold the folks, get involved with your city, and you'd be surprised that you can make a difference in how things go.
And the best way to get involved right now is today is voting day. And it is an opportunity, an important opportunity. Sandpoint has been known to not have a lot of people come out and vote, and we could change that. I mean, it could change. And so where do we go? How do we find out if we don't know we want to vote? What do we do?
You know, I want to swing back to that. Okay. So I'll kind of throw out that where there are five voting precincts and five different places that people vote in Sandpoint. But on specific issues that, you know, both the Bee and the Reader have had the candidates fill out questionnaires. And where are the candidates on the Memorial Field issue?
You know, if I recall correctly, I think both of them expressed support for that measure. And so, you know, it's got a, you know, pretty broad base of support. Now, the big question is whether or not that support is going to be to the tune of a 60% majority. Because, of course, that is the heightened requirement for these types of measures. You have to get a supermajority. So. Yeah.
And it actually was on the ballot 2 years ago and got a 53% approval.
Yeah, it was off by maybe 100-some votes, something like that. Yeah.
And the very low turnout that we had in that election. Hopefully we'll have more people turning out this election.
Yeah, that's another big question, of course, when you see these local-only elections, they're historically low turnout. So,
but luckily it's 60% of turnout, though. It's not 60% of the registered voters in the county. So.
Right, yes.
That's right, 60% of the people that turn out. So, voters who may be listening, if you turn out, your vote carries a lot of weight in this election. Another issue on these two mayoral candidates, Shelby Ronstadt and Mo Dunkel, Reader had a question about where they stand on legalization of cannabis or marijuana. Was there a difference between the candidates on that one?
We kind of picked that question just because even though the mayor is unlikely to address it in his term, it's one of those other areas where they seem to have a little bit more common ground. And they don't necessarily see, you know, that this is, in this day and age, a necessary thing. And so, once again, I would, you know, refer listeners to these questions and to get their full responses. But once again, another interesting area where they have some more common ground than you might think.
Yeah.
And I read this morning that California's putting it on the ballot in November 2016.
There, yeah. Yeah, there. It certainly is a trend now that, yeah, of course, there's two levels. One is legalization for medical reasons.
Right.
And it seems pretty well proven that marijuana does help a lot of people with medical conditions.
Especially cancer.
Nausea control, things like this.
Yeah, I grew up in a very conservative small town in Oregon, and when I was visiting there a few years ago, an old fellow, he would worked in sawmills all his life, and a very conservative guy, and he was showing me, he'd contracted cancer, unfortunately, but he was showing me he had a kind of a butter that he was taking, and it was legal in Oregon.
Right.
And he said it really helped.
Yeah.
You know, you would never have pegged him when I was a renegade youth growing up, and marijuana was a very bad thing, as somebody that would be, you know, now staunchly in favor of it.
But, sure. Yeah. You know, I think I don't have too much of a dog in that fight, but what interests me most about the issue is the really crazy tax revenues that other states are seeing. And just think of what we could do if we were putting that money into our schools or something like that. You know, that would be that could be transformative in some ways.
Washington and Colorado both have legalized recreational marijuana, and they're making a lot of money off those taxes now, actually. Mm. Anything else on the Sandpoint mayoral race here that is worth mentioning? We talked about apathy. Both of the candidates hope to get people more engaged. One question that was interesting that came up during the forum was whether either candidate felt that in light of the shooting of the civilian a year and a half ago by Sandpoint police, the very unfortunate situation where the woman was approaching them with a knife and they shot her. Both of them seemed there, you know, very, very, you know, concerned and compassionate for the victim. They both defended, I think, if I got this right, Cameron, you were reporting on it, they both defended the decision that it was a justified shooting, but both of them called for more more training by the police for dealing with these types of domestic situations.
Yeah. Now, if I recall correctly, it seemed like the tone of those of their answers for that were that, you know, they support the police department and they, you know, they think that it's important that we support our officers and whatnot, but they weren't happy with the outcome of this particular case. They thought it was a tragedy. They thought it maybe was unnecessary, and they are hoping to see some changes in training or something that can hopefully buy those critical seconds that could potentially be the difference between a dead person and maybe an incapacitated person who can then get the help that he or she obviously needs.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, so today's election day, and there are 5 voting precincts here in town. So if you're a Sandpoint City resident, you get a vote. If you're not a registered voter, you can actually register at the polls today. And you do that, you have to take identification, you have to bring proof of residency. You have to be a resident for 30 days. So you need to bring a utility bill or something that shows that you've been a resident with your name on it. And you can register at the polls. There are 5 polling places. The airport precinct, which is the north part of town, votes at the Bonner County Extension Office on North Boyer Avenue. That's there just a little right at the fairgrounds, basically. The Baldy precinct, which stretches basically west of town, kind of on either side of Baldy, actually south of Baldy, it votes at First Christian Church at 201 North Division Avenue. The Humbird precinct, which is kind of the middle part of town, it votes at the United Methodist Church at 711 Main Street. The Sandpoint precinct, which covers the kind of the south and east part of town, if you live there, you vote at Community Hall, 204 South First Avenue. And the Washington precinct, which is the south and southeast part of town to the lake, votes at First Lutheran Church at 526 South Olive Avenue.
And if you want to find out more information, there's tons of it on Sandpoint Online under your voter's guide.
Yes, the Sandpoint Online voter's guide. You can go to sandpointonline.com and click on the vote. Or go to the direct link if you want to type it right in. You go to sandpointelections.com. Takes you right to the page. You'll get all kinds of information on how to vote, where to vote, as well as there's a rundown of the candidates and various links off to information on the candidates.
I want to thank both the Bonner County Daily Bee for covering this election and the Sandpoint Reader. You've done an excellent job in bringing the information to our citizens, and that's, of course, your job, but thank you for doing that. There's a great voter's guide in last Friday's Daily Bee also.
Yeah, if you have last Friday's Daily Bee, they have an extensive collection of information on all the races. We did want to take 2 minutes. We only got a couple minutes left to talk about the Pondere mayor's race, because they have 3 candidates contending for that. Karen Lee Engel, Phil McNierney, and Steve Geiger. We really don't have time to dive into that particular race, but the Daily Bee Voters Guide on Friday has a good write-up of those candidates answering a bunch of questions.
Mm-hmm. And so Jim McKiernan from the Daily Bee and Cameron Rasmussen. I'm going to get that eventually, Cam. Thank you so much for coming in. We really appreciate it. Get out and vote. It's the day. We're going to remind you that tomorrow I'll be in the studio at 8 o'clock with the Sandpoint Filmmakers Network. And on Thursday morning, Jack and Jim will be here with folks from the Idaho Trails Association and Friends of Scotchman's Peak Wilderness. So stay tuned to the KRFY Morning Show. We're going to leave you now with a John Prine song. It's called In a Town This Size. We hope you have a beautiful day. Correct, Chris?
Yeah. Let's everybody remember, it's election day. Please exercise your right. Get out there and vote.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.